Okay, so we are rolling. And Chell, why don't
you read
that one?
Hello, my name is Chell Anderson, and I am 67 years old. Today's date is Monday, December 5th of 2022. I live in Hovland, Minnesota. I'm here today with Denovan, my one small step conversation partner.
Hi, my name is Donovan Damon. I'm 52 years old. Today's date is Monday, December 5th, 2022. I live in Grand Portage, Minnesota. I am here today with Chell, my one small step conversation partner.
Perfect, guys. And then we'll do card number one. And you can ask each other that.
Okay, Donovan. What made you want to do this interview today?
I guess I'm really curious. I'm really curious about how, you know, why it is that people do what it is they do. That's always been a curiosity to me. And in college, I took a lot of social studies courses, different things like that. So I was actually thinking about majoring in sociology, and it's just such a curiosity to me. And and plus, I think community is very important to me. Community is important, and the well-being of community, regardless of where the community is at. I'm always interested in, a community's well-being. Grand Marais, Grand Portage, Hovland, wherever it is, Duluth. I've lived in Duluth when I attended college, and I've always been involved in community, and so I think this conversation is hoping to get learn about others who might not share the same values or that kind of thing. I also think that hopefully that maybe I could offer something, you know, to somebody else that might not have a similar perspective in looking at the world and that kind of stuff. So, but that's why I joined today.
And then you want to ask Chell the same.
Oh, what made you, Chell? What made you do this interview today?
Yeah. Well, I came to it in a little maybe different trajectory, but what made me feel like, yeah, I'm going to do this and accept the opportunity was that I think a lot like you, I'm really curious about everything. and that includes the human part of my reality. And I'm really interested in how people become who they are and how they're continuing to become. And I'm really kind of motivated by the idea of sharing, which isn't just about material things, but about, you know, creating a collective ideas and thoughts about how we live together. And so sharing stories, hearing others, sharing my own ideas, and how those influence our life together, both, you know, really locally, but also in the big picture. Those are things that are important to me. So this fits really well with that, both those things and lots of other things too. But I think those were the main reasons I agreed.
So we'll go to number two. And this is where you get to read each other's bios as written. And then you can follow up with a question or two.
I heard you on the, I've heard you on the radio before, I think. Right? You got to, okay.
I'm afraid so.
Wow. So you got a very distinctive voice. That's nice. It's very comforting voice too.
Oh,
so
well,
that's nice.
Thank you. That's, you know, I'm glad it strikes you that way.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll start. Hello. My name is Donovan Damon. I'm a traditional drum keeper. I have lived in Cook County for 35 years. Oh, gosh. There's a lot of questions for you, Damon. But I'll do my best not to not to share the time. So one of my questions would be, so you told me at the start that you were 52, and so you haven't lived here all your life in Cook County. And you said now that you lived in the cities and in Duluth and maybe lots of other places too. But so you, did you come back to Grand Portage, or did you start here and go away and come back, or tell me a little bit about that?
Should I do that now? So I moved up here when I was like 13 years old, and from Minneapolis. Yeah, my grandmother was actually born in Grand Marais, Chippewa City, and so that's my kind of affiliation with this area. Mm-hmm. And my mother actually started to, right before I had, right, so I was 13 years old, but right before I had come back here, my mother started to kind of touch roots with, or started to touch with some of her roots from this area. She's an enrolled tribal member here from Grand Portage. And so she started to, I guess, be involved in the, like coming up to the powwow, that kind of thing. And then I think, I do recall, like, she's talking about telling stories about, you know, her grandmother, I mean her mother, so which is my grandmother, kind of continuing to come back to the reservation and visiting. And and so I think because of her kind of like following in her mother's footsteps and that kind of, and continuing on kind of the keeping the connection of the Grand Portage, Chippewa City and the area, keeping the that connection kind of strong. My sister ended up as a young lady finding a boyfriend and kind of moved into this area. And then I kind of stayed with her for the summer. And I stayed with her for summer, and I loved the area. And shortly after that, it was like my whole family then kind of came back to this area. My mother did make the transition of moving here. So so I kind of, you know, as a kid, you just do with your, with your, what your parents are doing and your other family is doing. And so my whole family was moved up here then, and that was 35 years ago. And that was the coming back, I guess, to Grand Portage and how I ended up here. I think that, does that answer some of your question?
Yeah.
I'll give you a little bit of an idea.
Yeah, thank you. So I loved how you put about your mom, and maybe it was about your grandmother also, but your mom, about touching roots, and then you said connecting with the roots, but I really liked that image of, you know, your mom or grandmother being somewhere else, and then and their roots are there. I mean, the roots are out there, right? Even if we're not, you know, thinking about them consciously, right? We all have our roots going out from us, just like lots of other things in the world. And that, you know, maybe unbeknownst, in no conscious way, were they reaching out, you know, and then touching roots, you know, up here. And I thought that was a wonderful image of how those things transpire, sometimes in a way that we can't kind of necessarily explain with great logic or, you know, rational explanations. It's just that, oh, well, this was a point in my life where, oh, yeah, that's, you know, makes, I don't know, feels right, or, you know, makes sense, or is practical even.
And then
it happens. Yeah. And so, so another question I have right away is, so at what point or how, you know, I would have only the most superficial, and maybe it doesn't even reach that level, of what a drum keeper is to you yourself and to the community here. And so anything that you are comfortable or willing to share about how you came into that role, or that life, I mean, it might be that's maybe a better way of how living it, being the drum keeper, and what that means to you and to your community. Anything you would share about that, I would be really interested to hear.
Yeah, that's there's a lot there.
I'm sure there is.
How I kind of came to be a drum keeper was that shortly after I moved out, well, not shortly after, but 35 years ago, I came to Grand Portage. I would say I was in my, I was in my 30s, you know, after I think I was about 26, I think, when I had my first child. Mm-hmm. And so I was about, I was roughly in my early 30s that, once you start, and I began, by the time I was like 30, 31 years old, I had two children. And because of your children, you know, you really kind of start to look at your life, because your life is not just about you have a responsibility. Mm-hmm. You have a responsibility to the children. And so right around 30 years old, I began to kind of like make some changes that I thought I needed changes, and I needed changes in my life, and to think more of my children in a healthier way, because I wasn't living all that healthy of a life, meaning that I struggled with chemical dependency kind of at that mm-hmm. age before I had children, a little bit afterwards. But it was right around, I think, when my children were couple years old, right around 30 years old, that I began to really make a change. Mm-hmm. And so that during that change, I really started to discover, again, I talked about roots, but I started to discover, you know, kind of a cultural aspect of who I was. Mm-hmm. And I'm over like half Native. Mm-hmm. And so, and then living on an Indian reservation, that that became important to me, to try to learn who I was as a Native person. Mm-hmm. And so during that transition, I ended up seeking help on a chemical dependency treatment center facility. Mm-hmm. And that was a culturally based program. And meaning that they taught Native American values and cultural aspects of ceremony, different things like mm-hmm. that, by elders, traditional elders. In fact, the lady who ran the program, her name was Dorothy Sam. She was an elder from Mille Lacs. Mm-hmm. And so she had great knowledge of the culture and wisdom and spirituality, different mm-hmm. things. So she actually ran ceremonies out there. And and for me, when I was in the treatment center, it just made sense to me. It started mm-hmm. to make sense to me, and about the cultural aspect of being Native. It was like, almost as though if like it was filling a void within me, you know, mm-hmm. that because I struggled again with chemical dependency, and I always kind of wondered why that it felt like, you know, things mm-hmm. just weren't right, living in society or that kind of thing. But mm-hmm. so as I began to learn more about this Native identity, or it began to fill up that kind of void in me, and I began to feel more of a complete person, kind of in a way. Mm-hmm. And so upon returning back to Grand Portage, I tried to retain what I was learning. Because at that time, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of culture, you know, mm-hmm. within the Grand Portage community. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but, you know, Grand Portage is one of the most assimilated reservations most assimilated communities mm-hmm. in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And because of the fort, you know, a lot of people don't know the influence of the fort, that mm-hmm. A lot of communities, Native communities in Minnesota, they didn't have the influence that the fur trading. I mean, at one time I saw on a map mm-hmm. that Grand Portage was actually like there was a big star where Grand Portage was because it was the trading route mm-hmm. where everybody came together, where everybody came together yeah. to make their trades and the furs and that. And so this was before the Northwest Fur, mm-hmm. I think it was called the Northwest Fur Trading Company, but before they moved it to Thunder Bay, or yeah. right outside of Thunder right. Bay. Mm-hmm. And let's see here, what was I going to say about it?
So the powerful influence.
The assimilation, and so the influence on the native community and that so that was a couple hundred years during the fur trade, and so the impact of that and the French and I suppose European traders, and so that I suppose it was only natural that kind of it's a dominant culture, that kind of thing, the economic is so many different influences into the culture and that. So Grand Portage really that they had lost a lot of the mm-hmm. The aspects of culture, for instance, like clan systems and that mm-hmm. You don't really hear that too much. A lot of people don't even know their clans here. Mm-hmm. And so for me, again, like coming back as a young man mm-hmm. having children and it just became important again. I think that filling that void in me, and it makes sense to me. So I kind of started to think about how am I going to keep this going, that mm-hmm. I feel that there's a well-being to it. Mm-hmm. So how am I going to keep it going in that? And so what I ended up doing was building a sweat lodge. I ended up building a sweat lodge. And for Native people, a sweat lodge is like it's a cleansing ceremony. It's a mm-hmm. cleansing ceremony to help give balance, that kind of stuff. And I even though I didn't know that much, mm-hmm. I did attend several ceremonies down and the treatment center that I was at with the elderly lady, that Dorothy Sam, that I talked about. And but so again, there wasn't that here in the community, but I believed in it so much mm-hmm. that I knew that I needed to kind of keep this going, that the connection, the belief was kind of like in my core mm-hmm. of who I was. And so without a doubt, I built a sweat lodge, and that's where I started to dream in a different way. Yeah. I started to dream in a ceremonial type of way. And so from there, that's when at that time there was a person who had passed on and Grand Portage, and the drum right around that time too that I was doing the sweat lodge and trying to help myself in that way the person who had passed on, there was a vacancy then, because sure, the person who had passed on.
Who was that?
And that was, his name was Speedy Porter. Speedy Porter. Okay. And so he had passed on. And then that drum at that time wasn't functional, kind of. Mm-hmm. It was meaning that it was kind of like kept in his closet, kind of sure. like. So mm-hmm. during his passing, it ended up being noticed by some of the community and by the spiritual advisor we had at that time, who was Jim Wendigo. Mm-hmm. And so he, took awareness of the drum, and then he invited the community to do a gathering mm-hmm. and to learn again. And he mm-hmm. was stating the importance of the drum in the community and so he did a teaching, mm-hmm. and it was a reviving of the drum ceremony. Yeah. And so at that time, he was doing the teachings about the significance of the drum and how it's related to the community, how it is the heartbeat of the community, how it would help the community to heal mm-hmm. And to regain some of that knowledge that was lost, regain some of that spirituality that was lost, to regain our connection to the land. And so there was a lot into that ceremony that he talked about, all the teachings about, what the drum is and what it meant and what it would mean for the community. And at that time, they weren't quite sure then what to do with the drum. They weren't mm-hmm. quite sure what to do with the drum and that who would take care of it. And So his brother kind of took that responsibility and kind of took care of it until we could figure out what was going to happen to it. Then for some reason, well, there was an unforeseen reason, but he had left the community. Mm-hmm. So then they needed to fill that vacancy again about mm-hmm. a caretaker for the drum. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I was asked, you know, to mm-hmm. take care of it. And the reason how that came about was, well, because that people said, well, you have a sweat lodge, you're kind of doing mm-hmm. these things and that. And so it's we see it kind of fit that you should take care of the drum. And so upon that, I took care of the drum with the, how would you say it, with the idea that in the springtime, we would ask the community. So I took care of it pending kind of a temporary kind mm-hmm. of a, yeah. That I would take care of the drum. And then we would ask the community in the springtime mm-hmm. when, because we feast the drum in the spring and the fall. And so when we got together again in the spring, we'd ask the community about it. And then they would say where the drum is supposed to go. And so when we did the ceremony in the springtime, the community did say, yeah, Donovan should continue to take care of the drum and that. And so it was, and that's how I became the official kind of like caretaker of the mm-hmm. traditional drum. Mm-hmm. And let's see, what else does it, I don't know, yeah, it's kind of a long story, but.
I love those details.
What else is that pretty much? Is that what
you're Yeah, what does it mean to you now?
Now it's mm-hmm. like, so that was roughly, I think, around 28 years ago or something mm-hmm. like that. Yeah. Roughly about 28 yeah. years ago, 27 years ago, somewhere around there. I'm still the keeper, but right now the drum is in a transitional stage. Mm-hmm. And there was a change made on the drum a few years ago, about 6 years ago, there was a change made on a drum. Mm-hmm. And it was a change that I had four dreams that I was showing, you know, I was actually shown of the transition, and then I was shown exactly what would happen and all this kind of stuff that, and I still believe it's in a transitional phase. Mm-hmm. And so right now the drum doesn't quite have that, connection to the community that it kind of should. Mm-hmm. And that comes again from a lack of communities kind of education, mm-hmm. communities kind of awareness of that cultural aspect of that. And so and that's also somewhat my responsibility too, but anyways, and so there's like it's a little bit in it's a little bit kind of like up in the air, so to speak, and meaning that it's still, I guess, in transition. That's the only mm-hmm. way I can think of it. It's mm-hmm. still in transition, and so it's still. I understand, you know, when you ask that question, it's kind of a hard to talk about it mm-hmm. because I understand the importance of the drum and what it could mean for the community and that. And so it has a direct correlation like that. Mm-hmm. And so, but again, it's like where I am, you know, what other people do mm-hmm. and where the community's at is I don't have any really control over that. And so then that correlates to or that has a connection back to how I feel about it or that kind of thing sure. or how mm-hmm. I am connected to the drum or you know that so I guess to try to answer your question would be I really feel the significance of the drum and I feel that the importance of the drum is really significant to the well-being of the community and that however it's kind of in the community's hands. It's kind of in the community's hands about what kind of the destiny of the drum, mm-hmm. and I know you didn't ask that, but so it's kind of a hard question. But I do feel, I guess I have some mixed emotions about it.
Sure.
You know, I have some mixed emotions mm-hmm. about it, and so I just feel that it could be a good thing for the community again. But again, I can't do this alone, and that's the other part about mm-hmm. it is that the whole purpose of the drum and. Is you know, for hundreds, if not thousands of years, there was the drum, the aspect of the drum, they had hand drums, you mm-hmm. know, for a long time. I think all cultures had mm-hmm. some kind of drums, yeah. hand drums in that respect. And but this drum that that I carry is meant to be sang with several people, mm-hmm. you know, and so it's meant to be sang with several people. And it came about 250 years ago, somewhere around there, during a time that Native people really needed to be able to come together and to be mm-hmm. able to feel that connection because of what was mm-hmm. happening, yeah. you know, during mm-hmm. the time of colonization and during the time of assimilation, the dominant culture. Mm-hmm. And so there's a few stories that came about, you know. One was the Buffalo Calf Woman of the Lakota, mm-hmm. and there's another kind of story that came about through Anishinaabe and through the dream drum that they call it, you know, and that's the kind of drum that I carry.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, nonetheless, is that the overall meaning of that is to connect us, mm-hmm. you know, and that our heartbeat becomes one with Mother Earth, our voice becomes one. And so that is the connection of that drum. And let's see, what was I saying? but so, yeah, I'm not too sure if I answered your question again or
you
something.
Did.
But okay.
You did, most definitely.
Yeah, so it was you. You answered, you asked some very, you know, good questions.
Well, I don't know about that, but I appreciate your answer.
Yeah.
You want to read Chell's bio?
Yeah, this is Chell's bio. I grew up in Minnesota, and I have lived in Cook County for 48 years. I have had the good fortune of visiting many parts of the world. I am deeply rooted here in both the landscape and the community, and still deep curious about both. So we can just go ahead and answer some, I mean, ask some questions in regards to that.
Yeah, anything that comes to mind.
Oh. So you lived here for 48 years in Cook County, so you must know a lot about the community, kind of, you know, a lot about Grand Marais, and you must know some about Grand Portage and that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I do. I do, of course. I mean, I haven't lived under a rock well those 48 years, but I always feel like I know this much, you know, a teeny bit of all that there is to know about this place. Both it's the landscape, which is, you know, our place on Earth here, is a big part of what I'm interested in and drawn to and connected to, but it doesn't exclude the human community. I've really I didn't come here I was 20 when I came here. I didn't come here because I knew that this is where I wanted to be. I didn't have any previous connection. You know, I had been to the, you know, the general area before that, but, you know, just a few times, and I was drawn to the landscape, but I didn't know anyone here. I didn't know anything really about the human community here. But I came for practical reasons, and I, you know, before long, I couldn't imagine really wanting to live anywhere else, and, you know, haven't ever regretted that. And I, you know, I guess I think the reason I said something about in the bio about having been to other places in the world, I think there's a vagabond kind of part of my nature and as a person. And so, you know, I liked exploring here, you know, I still do. But I explored other places in the world. So I saw lots of ways that people lived in the world in other ways. And so I think it wasn't, so by the time I, you know, was making up my choices that would have decided whether I stayed here, you know, longer term or went somewhere else to try to make my way in the world, it was not a difficult decision because I didn't wonder, well, what's it like somewhere else, or what, you know, maybe it's better, you know, over there or in this other country, or I think I had more of a grasp that, oh, well, you know, what one finds in one's life is not just about where you are, but what you put into it. And this seemed like a really great place for me to, you know, really become rooted, you know, in an intentional way versus, you know, the serendipity of what brought me here in the first place. So, yeah. So what do I know? I know that I still am deeply in love with this place, and I live my life. I try to live my life in a way that deepens that connection, and to learn from this place and everything that lives here.
So you're involved in the community then?
I have been involved in the life, the human life of the community. Yes, that's important to me. I think I had, I don't know all the reasons I, you know, came to believe that it's that I wanted to be a contributor to the collective life of around, and but that's important to me. And so, yeah. And sometimes I've been involved in very, you know, kind of traditional ways in terms of, you know, the dominant culture, you know, boards of directors and, you know, those kinds of things, helping organizations thrive in the community and do good things from my perspective in the community, whether it's, you know, the arts or it's, you know, land, you know, management, you know, those kinds of things, you know, wide range of things. But I've also kind of been I've been an activist within the community on a variety of different issues over the years. So that's, you know, that's more of a, I guess, a challenge, the position of the challenging, the status quo, or, you know, what are the norms. And so, you know, yeah, I've been involved in lots of different ways, which has taught me lots of things about the community. But
yeah. You know, one thing that I like what you mentioned about was that you talked about human community. So that must mean there's another community out there. That must mean there's another community out there. And of course, there is, yeah. You know. And that's really nice to hear. It's really refreshing to hear other people, because from a native perspective, yeah. That you know, there's the animals and the trees, the water. There's many other communities out there, and our connection to them as people. That so it's just nice that and refreshing that there you acknowledge that, and I've heard you say that several times here now. So
that's a big part of my reality.
Yeah.
You know. I'm not surprised that it comes out often. And I only really use that phrase, the human community, because I feel like I have to, because of what you're saying, which is that, you know, many people that I might have a conversation with, if I didn't say that, if I just use the word community, they just assume that that's it, that that's what I'm talking about. But when I say the word to myself, community, I don't mean just the human community. I'm not excluding the human community, but because I see us as embedded in the rest of the living community. And but that's not always how it's heard by others. So, yeah.
Nice.
It is nice. I feel so privileged to be, you know, here and be part of a place that, you know, there's more. You can find it anywhere, I've found, but it's just such a privilege to live somewhere where you don't have to go to great lengths to be aware of all the other parts of the community that are around.
So do you find that, since you talk about community and our connection kind of to nature and that, do you find like that to be a great teacher kind of like in your life and influence in that?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. I was lucky that I, through no, you know, effort on my part, I got to be a free range child. You know, nobody put limits on where I went, what I did. You know, I lived in a place that was safe, but it was kind of semi-rural. Wasn't like this, you know, it was in central Minnesota. But it was, you know, to the geography of a child, it was this big, you know, place with all kinds of interesting things, with, you know, forests and marshes and, you know, and I, no one said, oh, well, you can't go there, or you can't, you know, or you can't go unless I go with you. And it wasn't because they didn't care about me, but, you know, they were more, yeah, well, be an explorer, you know, discover, do what you know, do what's of your interest. You know, that was, I think, their attitude. Not that they said that, but, you know, I was encouraged. So I did. And so from a very, you know, young age, being, it was clear to me, oh, well, you know, this is, I need to learn how to be a part of this, you know, not just be a part of my, you know, my household or, you know, my extended family of humans. I need to be a part of all these things. And they've got a lot to tell me, you know, because I learned something every time I went out, right? Don't we all? I mean, if we're paying attention.
Yeah. I was just asking that because, because that, again, how sometimes our environment can teach us a lot, yeah. You know, and if we're really tuned in to that, we can learn a lot from that. And so, for instance, I shared with you about my connection to the culture and that.
Yeah.
A lot of that came through dreams and through, I believe, the environment that I was living in,
sure.
The land,
yes.
You know, the land and that. And so...
Yeah.
I just wondered if there was any similarities like that with you, meaning that, there is, I think, in all of our lives to some degree, but like, for instance, like some people have jobs that are definitely, you know, correlated to the land, the environment, environmental jobs or different things like that. But has that, has the land kind of like influenced you, like in terms of like employment or that kind of thing? And you did talk about being an activist in that, but so has it impacted you in kind of a little bit other areas like that too?
Sure. I would say it's, you know, I think one of the basic questions that we read about before, the, you know, well, who influenced you, like people, and surely I could come up with who, but I would say the world beyond people has influenced me way more than the people world. People like my parents, they gave me they were part of influencing who I am, who I became, right? I was, you know, so fortunate to have parents who loved me, parents who gave me lots of just freedom to become who I, you know, was drawn to be. But being out, having experiences just on my own, primarily as a really young person in the world around, was just extremely formative in terms of thinking about who I wanted to be, how I wanted to be in the world, and definitely influenced my decisions about what kind of, you know, job I wanted. I knew I didn't want a job that was indoors, for one thing, exclusively, you know, and I didn't come to all this in some, you know, instant of revelation. It was, you know, more just kind of making choices and testing things, and eventually, you know, coming to conclusions that, yeah, no, I don't, I, that wouldn't be me. So I eventually, what I landed in terms of, you know, a career or, you know, a way to make, support myself in the world was in the field of ecology, and which I'm sure is no surprise given what I've said about how I feel connected, and that's important, the connections. But I practiced that in many different roles, from, you know, working on the National Forest here, doing contract work, a lot of it here, but lots of other places in the country for short periods of time. It definitely influenced that, and I'm not working, and it influenced my activism, of course. You know, if something was, still does, you know, I don't have any delusions about that can control what, you know, you talked about this too, about we don't have control over what our community, our human community, chooses to do individually or collectively. But I feel the responsibility to make my perspective known in the community. And maybe other people will feel the same, or maybe they won't. But I have no choice but but to, you know, speak my perspective. Yeah.
Thanks. That was great.
I wish it was always an easy thing to do.
Yeah. You guys are having no trouble. It's great. And you kind of already touched on this, your influences, yeah. But if you feel like diving mm-hmm. into that together, mm-hmm. and it doesn't have to be mm-hmm. exclusive to people, I think.
I'll just tell one little story that relates to, I mentioned my parents, and I can't really separate, you know, who I am from them, because especially at this point in my life, I don't have my own children, but I recognize how important this, I'm putting my hands out here like I'm holding something. That's how I feel I was in with my parents. It's not that they were perfect or that they didn't have, you know, major flaws like all of us, but what I felt was that I was, you know, like I said, loved, but also that my life was mine to make, you know, that they didn't have, well, you should do this or you should do that, or, you know, so there was that kind of open-handed support, and so that's so important. I see that now in, you know, all the other things that came after in terms of becoming a person and developing my own values. They tell me I was always a very independent thinker. I was a pretty obedient child. I wasn't, you know, like troublesome from their perspective, but it wasn't because I just followed orders, you know. I was, you know, always apparently a pretty independent thinker, and that hasn't changed. But the story I really wanted to tell about how not about influences outside the human community is the I went out one day on my own. It was a late summer day, and I went down to a place that was, it was maybe half a mile or so, and I suppose I was maybe 10, you know, and I went down, and it was a little pond that was, so this had been like oak savanna and prairies, and I realize this now, right? I didn't know this at 10. But it was one of my favorite places. It was this little water body, right? There weren't many water bodies around close by. And so I had in mind, okay, I'm going to go down to the pond. I called it the pond today. And it was, you know, small. It probably wasn't much bigger than this conference room. And it was surrounded by, you know, really tall marsh grasses. It's a marsh reed grass. That's something I know now that I didn't know then. And so by late summer, this grass would have grown up and it would be, diminishing and being laid down because it's drying out. It's, you know, so it made this just incredibly comfortable place to just lie down because it was deep, you know, really deep bed of this of these grasses that it had accumulated for many years, obviously. But so I thought, oh, this would be a perfect day to go to the pond and see what's going on. So I went to the pond and I laid down, really nice sunny day, comfortable, you know, not hot, laid down on this grass, and I'm just watching the sky, and I'm, you know, just, you know, feeling whatever's happening, you know, sensations and sounds and views. And all of a sudden, there's some grass stem still sticking up, you know, high, and all of a sudden, I notice this fine, glimmering kind of thing floating in the air off the top of one of these grasses, and I'm, what is that? And then I eventually noticed that this thing starts to move. It's floating out there like a kite tail or something, you know, but tiny, just tiny, tiny. And eventually I can see it's not stationary anymore. It's not just, you know, kind of looping in the wind. It starts to actually move, and that there's something attached to it. And I, you know, I'd never noticed anything like this before, and so now I'm totally like, what is this? You know, I want to do that. You know, what could be more awesome than just, you know, floating up? And so I'm in my, you know, well, check it out mode. And so I start looking around to see if I can't find, because it's gone. I mean, I can't go with it or follow it. So I start looking around. Sure enough, I've identified another one, you know. So now I have a chance to really go before it goes, look, well, here's a tiny little spider, right? And so, you know, and I watched the whole thing. You know, I watched this strand of gossamer, you know, moving out from its body. And then it just let go, and off, you know, it went. And that was something I will never forget, ever. Mm. And feels like, I still feel like I'm attached, you know, in a sense, to this spider taking off. It's, and, you know, at the time, I didn't have some deep, you know, reflective thoughts about it. I was just excited at the idea that this is a creature, you know, like me, but not like me, but who can just take off, you know, and go with this, you know, under its own power. And I think it became it became one of those experiences that I reflected on many times about, that's how I want to live my life. You know, I want that to be part of how I live my life, that I'm not afraid to, you know, put myself out there and then go with whatever it is, you know, and not, yeah. So, so that I think is, you know, one of, you know, many, many ways in which the rest of life, you know, had a big impact on who I became. Oftentimes there'd be some decision to make and I would, well, you know, what would I do if I don't want to be disconnected, but I don't want to be stuck, you know, either.
That's a nice story. Mm-hmm. This is kind of goes off of what you mm-hmm. that story you just shared. So are you religious at all? The reason why I ask mm-hmm. that is because that, well, I mean, your experience, you know, how when somebody talks or when somebody shares a story in that, mm-hmm. we do kind of relate it back to our own stories and mm-hmm. that kind of thing, or many times we do but yeah, I've had kind of a similar kind of something like that. Yeah. But But so I was just wondering that, so that because it sounds very spiritual, at least for my kind of the way I identify what you just shared, it sounds kind of like a spiritual kind of like connection. Or is that kind of true, or do you kind of did that help to mold kind of your religious kind of affiliation, or that? I mean, usually we kind of follow in the footsteps of our, you know, parents or those people that came before us and that. But I was just curious about that. Is that?
Yeah, not in my case. I about following. I had lots of exposure to religion, you know, kind of the standard fair Christian religion. I think about that as being something really valuable also. But in terms of my own personal spiritual beliefs, they are not shaped by that. They've been shaped by my real life experience, which it has, everything I have experienced tells me that my spirit is connected to the earth, and that's where spirit is, and to the bigger cosmos that the earth is part of. So I just feel like I'm one very small, very tiny part of something that's vastness I have no direct understanding of, but I have experiential understanding of.
Neat.
Yeah. How about you?
How about me? What?
Well, you said.
I mean, religion or something.
Yeah.
Or what?
Were you exposed to, you know, kind of standard religious dogma, or were you not and found your own way, or how did you come to your place for spiritual values?
Yeah, I was exposed. My mother was, my grandmother was mostly, they were raised Catholic and the Christian kind of faith. And so, but, you know, I guess my mother didn't, we attended church a few times throughout the year. That was like on Easter, Christmas, different things like that. And, but so there was some influence there, but overall, I guess, like I explained earlier, that by the time I was a young adult, that I really didn't have too much. I don't know if it was because a lack of understanding or something, but anyways, maybe I just didn't, maybe it didn't influence me that much. And I guess I have a similar story like yours to where my influence is, I mean, and like I told you about through the through being a drum keeper, and that was, it was influenced through the land, was influenced a lot through my ancestors, if a person can kind of like relate to that. But but I also had an experience like yours, to where it's like through nature, that's where I really found my spirituality, I think, was, I remember actually being, I think I was maybe 14, 15 years old, and I was hunting partridge, and behind the old dump in Grand Portage here, and there was an old logging trail back there, and boy, I'd get lots of partridge back there. And so I remember looking up one time, there was like a little hill. I remember kind of feeling as though if I was being watched, you know, because the partridge are, you know, usually pretty close to the ground, and once in a while you see them in trees and that. But so I was looking mainly on the ground for partridge, and you got to kind of look good, because of course partridge blend in with the area and the environment. And so I was walking really slow, and that's the way I hunted for partridge. I walked really slow, and because if you move too fast, they'd fly away and that kind of stuff. So, and it was really brushy where I was at. They like a lot of brush, partridge do. And so I remember, you know, like really, you know, walking really still and slow and partridge hunting. And pretty soon I could feel as though if I was like being watched. And I happened to look up and there was about six deer and they were just like pretty close to me. I'd say maybe about 40 yards away. Mm-hmm. And they were in the trees. Mm-hmm. And there was like a little bit kind of a natural opening too. Mm-hmm. And so they were along the tree line in this natural opening and they were just watching me. Mm-hmm. They're watching me. And even when they noticed that I noticed them, they still kind of watched mm-hmm. me and kind of mm-hmm. see what I would do. And but it was just, I was so amazed and taken by, again, like having like direct eye contact mm-hmm. and then kind of just noticing how wild they are, mm-hmm. how wild they were in the woods mm-hmm. and just the essence of, mm-hmm. of that this was kind of their world. And but yet it was like an invitation to me that of, you know, being wild kind of like in nature. And so I was at awe. And then again, they kind of flipped up their tails mm-hmm. a little bit and then they kind of danced off. But it was that whole interaction there. There was something there that took place, kind of like mm-hmm. what you talked about, your spider. Mm-hmm. And there was something in there that just in those moments that really stood out and that lasted me for a lifetime and still lasts to this mm-hmm. day. And mm-hmm. that the influence that mm-hmm. had in my life is that nature mm-hmm. and the animals and being able to it has influenced me in so many different ways. Again, it's just like it is a part of me. It's a part of me in on a deep sense. Mm-hmm. And even though the funny thing is because I still hunt and I hunt deer, mm-hmm. that so I look at that deer like when I get a deer and I got a couple deer this year is mm-hmm. that I mean, there's nothing more powerful than looking that deer in the mm-hmm. eye after mm-hmm. you take in its life. Mm-hmm. And knowing that deer is giving you his life kind of mm-hmm. like so that you can live. And that's mm-hmm. the way I look at it. So it's very spiritual to me. It's very mm-hmm. spiritual to me. And then this year, too, for the first time, I'm actually taking it a step further because it's all about respect. You mm-hmm. know, it's all about respect for like in a native philosophy mm-hmm. that. So it's the more that you respect something, the more you get out of it. Mm-hmm. And that goes with anything in life. So, for mm-hmm. instance, the more I respect you, the more I'm going to get out of it. The more I respect, you know, the land, the more that you're going to get out of it and that kind of connection. And so. That's the way just that deep respect that I have has influenced me a lot. And
you talked about before about the part of the tension or uncertainty that there is around the drum now has to do with it being in transition. And you talked about the community. You don't have control over what community finds in terms of meaning in the drum and the ceremonies around the drum. Do I have that? Am I stating that accurately?
I think that.
Did I miss something?
I think that in a way I thought about this in our discussion too, yeah. that I mean, you talked about it too, that, I mean, I think that we do have some influence a little bit by what we do,
right.
you know, as individuals.
But you don't control it.
But no, we don't control it, but we do have mm-hmm. some influence, a little bit of influence, mm-hmm. like you said, activism, different things. Just our presence and what we mm-hmm. do in that, in life is mm-hmm. does have some, so.
But does that uncertainty or the situation, what I don't know mm-hmm. what the best word is for it, but does that situation create a feeling in you of wanting to make special, efforts or pay special attention to trying to raise your children in a way that keeps them more in tune or aware or make sure they have the opportunity to be aware of the of the traditions and of the spiritual connection to the land, and how I'm just curious about how you work with your own personal feelings about the land and your connection and with either your family or the wider community.
Yeah. it's been a little bit tricky, I guess, mm-hmm. in a way, or a little bit for like my kids, I took my own experience in relation to the culture and mm-hmm. in relation to what we're learning and that. So I guess that I didn't want to I wanted my kids to kind of be open to choose on their own. And so I realized the influence that I would have too as a person, especially being a drum keeper, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So it was important for me that my kids kind of choose that mm-hmm. way on their own. Yeah. And I did purposely things that, so for instance, when I was doing a sweat lodge and my kids were young, I mm-hmm. said, you know, that you could be involved with this if you want. You could, you know, because there was aspects of that, like mm-hmm. taking care of the fire, different things sure. like that. And, but it was their choice. Mm-hmm. It was their choice to participate. Mm-hmm. And so I practiced that with my kids. However, like, I do have grandkids now. I have grandkids. Okay. And grandkids, you know, they're a little bit more, when kids are younger yeah. and you're doing anything, kids yeah. are just, you know, they're yeah. like a sponge. And yeah. so they soak up that information, mm-hmm. whatever it is you're doing. Mm-hmm. And you can see the influence is a lot greater, meaning that, so for instance, if I'm doing a pipe ceremony mm-hmm. with my grandson, and mm-hmm. He does draw that out, and actually, you know, talk about influence that, mm-hmm. He influenced me to sing, you know, and to do my yeah. pipe ceremony and that kind cool. of thing. And so that was very unique, and I didn't tell his mother for a little while because it was just like our thing with grandpa, you know. Yeah. It was like, so when he would come over, I would automatically, pull out the drum, mm-hmm. and then start singing with him and do a pipe mm-hmm. ceremony with him. And he was like, I think he was like 2.5 years old. Wow. And he would smoke the pipe. Yeah. And the thing is that I was a little bit reluctant yeah. to tell his mom because he's yeah. smoking the pipe, but yeah. he doesn't inhale it. No. So that's yeah. the thing. He doesn't. Yeah. It's not yeah. like he's inhaling it right. in his lungs.
Not harming.
But he actually knew how to smoke the pipe without like coughing or inhaling yeah. it. And he would only take like a puff, you know. Yeah. But it was a sacred kind of thing that yeah. he would know. And yes. so that was the influence I think that a young person had.
Yeah.
on me yeah. and then helping to kind of pass that down, I guess, that yeah. You know, it just comes like a natural kind of thing mm-hmm. and natural wellness about mm-hmm. that, how you want to pass something mm-hmm. down. And but the thing about it is so that, am I influencing him or is he influencing me? That's kind of the thing. So
yeah, yeah.
Anyways, that's a great yeah. question. And so yeah. I think we influence each other, yeah. and especially if yeah. you're listening to kind of the spirit, or you're yeah. listening to yeah. the intuition kind of yeah. like thing. Mm-hmm. It's just like, when do you know when to, like, when's the right time to bake cookies or yeah. something like that with your grandkids or something, yeah, right. or when you would you, yeah. so you kind of just listen to those, that intuition or that kind yeah. of thing. And so, that definitely, has an impact on, you know, future generations yeah. and that kind of thing. And so mm-hmm. I really believe that, again, that if he's around more and he sees more of those values and connection to nature, that kind of thing, that mm-hmm. he'll have more experiences, kind of like what we shared and that kind of thing. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I definitely believe that. As far as the general, the wider community,
mm-hmm.
I have applied for a job, or I'm in the process of applying for a job, and that is dealing with trust lands up here.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that I have a totally unique perspective. I believe that, so in terms of like indigenous knowledge,
mm-hmm.
Because Indigenous knowledge is, like a lot of people, is to me, it is a lot of, like, right now it's not really looked at as a it is kind of looked at as inferior, because Western science and that kind of is the dominant culture and that kind of thing. So Indigenous knowledge in terms of, like, our relationship with the environment, animals and that, is not, like, taken seriously, I believe. Mm-hmm. And especially even on an Indian reservation, you think that there would be more influence and at least adhering to Native cultural values in terms of, like, for instance, there was a bear hunt up here. And a lot of people on the Grand Portage Reservation don't hunt bears. But it was said by somebody at Natural Resources that they didn't hunt them because of the clans and that kind of thing. But that wasn't, there's a little bit of that, but not really, because a lot of people don't know their clans. But we do have a lot of people coming from, like, Wisconsin area and that, coming on the reservation hunting bears. And even in the springtime when bears have cubs stuff. And so it really became eye-opening to me that, again, and you talk about, like, things like assimilation, institutional racism, different things like that, and how there is a lack of awareness about what exactly, that we do have a way, Native people have a way, in which we connect with our environment. We did have a way. And that's what I kind of want to bring back, is that a lot of people don't know, for instance, like, every single one of these creatures, every single one of these animals, whether it's a bird, a moth, or whatever, they all have a place. Even a mouse, you know, has a place in that forest. And if you remove that mouse, it's gonna impact the whole forest. Bees, different things, we've heard about that. And so, for instance, that bear has a place within the forest. And, you know, he is traditionally, like, a keeper of the blueberries, you know. And so he is keeper of the blueberries. He's keeper of other aspects in regards to, you know, nature and responsibility, different things like that. And so a lot of people aren't aware of that, you know. So when you know, you're going to, they're trying to, you know, have a bear hunt in that because of the, they believe the moose, calves, are affected by the bears in the springtime and that, and the population is down because of bears. And you know, that I think bears do, you know, have an effect on, you know, but still wolves, different things like that. And but there's no wolf hunting up here. And there's people don't even know that story, because there's a story that Nanabuju, he was the mythological Anishinaabe kind of person that went around and named all the plants, and a lot of teachings come from him, and that his purpose in the world, and you know that. So, but the wolf walked with Nanabuju, and it was taught that, you know, what happens to the wolf will happen to the Anishinaabe, that those different stories like that, you know. And so those stories have a connection to us and help to bring us, you know, who we are and our clans. I mean, imagine, you know, having a governance, everything about Native people. I mean, we cared so much about our environment that we included the environment within the core values of who we are. Our governments is the animals taught us how to our government is modeled after the animals, the clan system, the bears, the fish, the different things like that. And so, because by watching nature and that, we learn how to be healthy ourselves, and so that we're including nature in who we are in our decision making every day, you know. And so that's the kind of connection we had. And so, and I think a lot of that is missing. So, and I think that for me, I was taught, like, through my dreams and that, as, like, about our connection, you know, about our connection and about our those teachings. And so I want to bring some of that back. And So again, but I don't have any control over whether they're going to hire me or not. So, but so anyways, yeah. that's kind of off yeah. your story. So.
I love that you guys are sharing so much. We are out of time, but I want to know, so we didn't get to number four, so if you want to take a stab at articulating your personal political values, which I actually kind of think you've both done through your stories, but you're welcome to do that, or if you want to talk about anything else to close, I think you both have clearly so much wisdom and are very thoughtful people, so I'd be curious to know, like, you know, what your hopes for the future are of our community and our country, and, you know, how we come together and bridge some of the gaps. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'm just putting all that out there, and I want to be respectful of your time, too, because we've used it.
Yeah. As far as my political values, I spoke a little bit about that in regards to the Klan and that, but I really don't vote. Mm-hmm. I don't vote, and then some people are probably mad at me for that. But because I think it's like the what's going on in America today. It's like, we live in a capitalistic society, that kind of thing, and it's like everything revolves around money. Everything revolves around money, and I just see it as kind of like that, regardless of what, even if it's a Native person, I think there's some Native people in the Senate, or even we have a Native person who is Lieutenant Governor or whatever. That her name is Peggy Flanagan. But I just for me, this is just my that I don't. They don't represent my values. They don't represent my values. They represent American values. Mm-hmm. And I am making that distinction that I don't believe in those kind of values, because it's like, again, it's like the way they view the environment and those kind of things. And so I just don't vote. And I just don't think that at any time will they represent my values. I think there are some of the Green Party or something like that that maybe might reflect some of my values a little bit more, but overall, because, well, how many people of those parties, they don't have that major influence. I think that some of the Democratic or Republican type of, they're dominating the kind of the political arena. And so just because of that, I really kind of don't vote. So that's kind of what my stance on the political values. And I wish that as far as like, so for Native people, I do vote on the reservation. And I do think that that they should be, like, for instance, a tribal council here in Grand Portage, that they should be kind of representing Native values and that. So, but at the same time, they still, in the assimilation and that kind of thing, they kind of, they still don't. So I'm kind of a loner, meaning that, and that's, I do run for tribal council. I do run for tribal council, but, and I run on the platform that nobody is, you know, like, nobody is representing. I don't have any representation. I don't have any representation for not even on the tribal level of them, you know, like representing my values. So I'm unfortunate, I guess. But so I try to, in a way, influence and be in my own activist. And I do try to bring up stuff. But again, it's like, when a lot of people don't value what you value, you're kind of alone. So, but that's where I'm at.
Yeah. Which I can totally relate to, having, lived, made choices and lived my life in a way that's very different from most of my peers. I can't say everyone. And from the dominant culture that is my culture. You know, I can't separate the fact that I was born, you know, where and when I was born and who I was born to and the culture that I know that I've felt I have a minimal feelings of connection to my culture in general, because my values are not the values of the dominant culture of our society. That doesn't mean I feel alone, because I know I'm not, you know, the only person who has these feelings, but it does mean that I feel poorly to completely unrepresented, you know, in the political realm. I do, I guess, maybe I feel part of my responsibility, though, is to, if there seems to be a dramatic isn't the right word. If there seems to be, oh, look, it's snowing. All right. If there are times when I feel like what could be at stake in a particular election, whether it's something local to Cook County or something at a higher level in the political realm, that I definitely can feel compelled to vote. It's back to, well, I'm not in control, and they won't be who I want them to be, but they'll be better than, you know, somebody else. There have been very few times when I voted because I really wanted this person to be my representative, versus they were, you know, the lesser of two. I don't know, evil isn't necessarily the right word, but they were, you know, the lesser of two not that great options. But I completely understand how you feel about it, because I, you know, share a lot of those, I think, those same feelings of really not being represented. But that just comes, I bring that back to myself, and I imagine you do too, that just reminds me that, okay, well, that's why you have to be out there, you know, providing your point of view, communicating with people about what's important to you. I can't expect anyone to read my mind about what is important to me. So, you know, you're running for tribal office and, you know, making your view known that way. I use whatever, you know, means are at my disposal to communicate what's important to me, what I value, so that at least I know that I've done my part to make it clear that there are people in the world who think, you know, this or that is important versus some other thing. So I totally get the, and, you know, it's a, I think it's a, maybe, you know, the way we govern in, well, really both of our cultures, in the sense that, you know, it's a body of elected people, that there's a real downside to that. It, you know, there's of course lots of glowing, and, you know, I'm not saying it's all balderdash, you know, value to the idea of representation and people, you know, having someone who they elect to, you know, I'm not trying to totally diss the idea of representative democracy, but it isn't, it's, you know, and as often said, it's not perfect, but it's better than anything else. Well, I'm not so sure it's better than anything else. It's just that we're not willing to really try other things. And I understand that that is really scary. You know, we really don't try to other things. So I don't think we're really in a position to say that, you know, it's not perfect, but it's better than anything else. No, because we really, across the whole, you know, world of, outside of, you know, isolated indigenous groups that we know next to nothing about and how they govern themselves, no one is trying anything much different. You know, there's a few things that people have tried and are willing to give a go at, but we've kind of lacking in imagination on that, you know. So, and maybe, and I'm not saying I have the answers, but I guess I'm disappointed in us as a species that we haven't been more able to use the amazing things about us as a species to be more, do a better, make our way better in the world together as people, but also as a part of the bigger life that we are part of. Yeah. So I don't want to end on a really.
Well, that was a good note. Okay. I thought you
ended up. I'm curious because I know a little bit. I know that you're an artist, and I know that you're also a very creative person. You've written books. You do your weekly. You mentioned you've heard it on the radio. You write every week about the environment, and I'm curious, like, how you both, how your values inform your art, and
I'd love to hear about
that. You create and put in the world, and if part of that, the hope with that is to like have some kind of impact, you know, on this sort of stuff.
Go ahead.
Just a small question.
Yeah. Right.
No, it definitely has an impact, I think, on the my art, and that, like, right now I'm doing this big piece out of wood, and that's the other thing. I think the medium that I work in is wood. At least that's the predominant medium that I'm working in is wood, and that ever since I was little, that I had a connection. Like when I'd run my hand across wood, well, this is wood, but it's well, I can feel it a little bit. But I feel this connection to wood, like when I run my hand across it, especially if it's not stained or anything like that. And I run my hand across it, I can feel this energy through it. And so sanding the wood and that kind of thing. And I definitely believe it, you know, has a strong connection. Like I'm listening to the wood. The wood, so for instance, I might draw a picture or that, and my picture is influenced by something that I want to represent or in my dream or that kind of thing. So for instance, it might be, I'm right now, the current piece I'm working on is called Bidabin. And what that is in the native way, that is like it's a spirit. It's a spirit that there's a stillness that happens. And hunters will call it like where a total silence. It's right before the sun comes up. There's a silence that is kind of, I forgot what it's called. But anyways, it's like a silence to where the world is just like still, kind of like not even a bird is singing, you know, not even a bird is chirping. And it's during that time, it's like, I forgot, there's a whole story to that. And but it's like during a couple seconds, during a couple moments or a moment where the world is still. And that there's a, it's like a renewal. It's like a renewal right before the renewal kind of happens. And so that's what I'm kind of depicting within my woodwork, you know, that I'm doing. And so that... It's a spirit that kind of is about balance, and it's a woman, that it's kind of a woman spirit, that she's kind of coming from the clouds, and she's balancing two stars in her hand, and the lake is below her, and the island right there, the island is below her too, and so, and she's balancing two stars kind of like this, and the animals are looking up at her. The animals are looking up at her and that kind of thing. And so it's got everything from the sweat lodge in there to the drum to all these different aspects of that. And it kind of explains a little bit. So it explains about respect, basically. Respecting kind of creation, respecting, you know, that moment. That's what it kind of comes down to. And so my art is definitely influenced by that, you know, kind of what I just described. And so, and I like that it's out of wood, because then wood, as I'm working with the wood, I kind of like I'm listening to the wood. The wood is kind of like speaking to me in this language that doesn't have any words, and it's like influencing how these pieces go together, and how different kinds of wood, you know, speak to me in different ways, and so it influences that. And it's that, and I hope that people can see that. As when you walk into the lodge downstairs, I did that big spirit tree. It's like 16 feet tall and 20 feet long. And so, and that's the spirit tree. And again, it's like people look at that and they can see, like, I think they can see themselves in it. That's why my hope, you know, is that they can see themselves in it. And I think, you know, that we're all kind of like... pieces of the puzzle, and that's kind of the work that I represent. Is it's kind of like I guess there's a name for it. I didn't know there was a name for it, but it's like they call it intarsia. I think it's a it's kind of comes from Italy a long time ago, where you take a landscape or a picture and that, and you kind of use pieces of wood to represent kind of that picture, larger picture. It's kind of like a mosaic. But so I didn't know that what I was doing. I mean, was that, but that wasn't my idea. But so, but, and again, I think that it's reflective of that. So again, I hope that people see that they're a part of that. They're a part of that, and that every piece, you know, needs each other to make a whole, kind of like. So that's what kind of my work is. And so I think it, I think it's reflective of that.
Yeah. Yeah, your values are represented there.
Yeah, and you know, and whether that influences a lot, I don't know, you know. Maybe because I think art does influence us a lot, but I don't know how much. I think that, you know, I think that, like, right now we need it more than anything in our lives is we need action. You know, we need action because of, you know, just what's going on with the environment, different things like that. But we need people in those positions of power, you know, and they are positions of power, those people that hold office, because of the influence that they do have and their ability to create and make laws and policies that that do govern us, you know. So I think that, again, it's maybe not that as powerful as being in those positions and that, some of the art, you know, but I do think that it has an influence because we see it every day, like when somebody walks in there and be able to see that. Now, if we can, you know, again, because again, it's those people who are in power who are going to buy that art, especially if it's in a public place and those different kinds of things like that. So, but if we, you know, have that, you know, in public places, different things like that, I think it is going to influence, and it does have the potential to influence just as much as, you know, those people in political power or that kind of thing. So, yeah. I don't know. I didn't. It was probably too much. A little bit too much information, but
I don't think so. I like the idea that we've been talking about the, you know, not connections, but also that no one piece of something, one element of something, is in charge, in control, right? Not me personally, not you personally, not any other individual life out there of any kind is in charge. It's all part of this whole. And the mosaic of change, the mosaic that we need to probably need to create change, is kind of similar to what you're representing in your work, which is, you know, these pieces coming together, right? Well, you're a piece of the change by creating this art that has a message, a point of view, a set of values that's manifested in it. And that's a piece of this many things that, in my view, need to be happening and happen in order for there to be change. You know, what's the great phrase? Be the change you want to see in the world. Well, you know, one can do that by running for office and, you know, going down that, being that piece of change. Or one can do it by just doing your job really well. If it's something that's contributing to something that you think is something you want to continue to be part of the future. I mean, contributing to the world we want, as opposed to whatever it is we think we have, can happen in as many ways as there are people and other living things. I mean, they're all contributing to, we may not understand how or why, or, but they are. I mean, we've been shaped, those of us who live here and who've ever lived here, have been shaped mostly by this land. It's not vice versa. I mean, now we look at it and we think, well, we dominate the land. And, you know, in a lot of ways we do. But what shaped us and our cultures here is the land. And that has not changed. And as the land changes as a result of things that we do, we will change too. Mm. So these contributions to the change, whatever that becomes, is being made by everyone. And my little things that I do are what I feel I can find the personal resources to do and creative resources to do that are rewarding to me. So it's partly selfish. I mean, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on stuff, doing stuff that I don't find any personal reward in terms of, you know, representing my values in the world and what is important to me. So my little things that I do, I try to do what I do in a way that I hope can not only project my perspective and how I look at myself in the world, but also be not so, but do it in a way that can engage with people on a variety of levels. Not everyone is going to, as I think you do, be able to relate to my point of view, my spiritual point of view. But that doesn't mean that I can't relate to them in some way. And so I, you know, the things I put together, I try to have my point of view, my values be embedded in there, but that they're not the focus. It's not my values that are the focus. It's this place we live and how you know, beyond words, important it is, and how paying attention to it is a central part of being a human being. But I try to do it in a way that is, you know, maybe approachable to, you know, a lot of people listening versus, you know, somebody who's just like me or, you know, has the exact same perspective. I have no idea how successful it is. I know that the subject matter matters because I know people express their appreciation for things, but I know that if I was doing radio pieces about laundry soap or had written a book about, you know, the evolution of the washing machine, that no one would be interested, you know. There'd be a quick, you know, change the channel or, you know, put that one back on the shelf. That's what keeps me going, I guess, in a way, is not just that it matters to me, but that I definitely get the sense that there are people who, for lots of reasons, really do like to focus on the same subject matter, whether they want to focus on it in exactly the same way I do or not. And that's, I think that's can be a good thing. It's part of that same, it's many things that, you know, need to be happening in order to make things different. And maybe this is some little, you know, push in that direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys, for doing this.
Yeah, thanks, Donovan. Well,
yeah, it's
really
fun.
How
did it
feel? Oh, yeah, fun.
Not too bad.
Yeah.
Not too bad. I didn't say that.
It was torture. No.